everybody, and welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Look Back and Animat's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, the title will go and explain everything for you. This podcast is about animation. You got that? Are you surprised that it's really that simple to describe it? Alright, good. But specifically, however, it talks about the latest news that happened this week. So, for starters, we're going to begin with the biggest story that happened this week, which is the Oscar nominations. And then afterwards, we will be looking into Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, in which there is an update to that. Then afterwards, we will be looking into a couple of sequels that have been announced from Illumination Entertainment. Then afterwards, we are looking into something that is also long-awaited, this time being the release date to the comeback of Samurai Jack. And finally, we will end things off with Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And now, the moment that we have all been waiting for, something in which we have been waiting for months to see. What are the best of the best of the movies in 2016? The one list that can legitimize them all, the one that people really do take seriously on. I am talking, of course, about the 2017 Oscar nominations. And so far from the list that we have gotten, there have been plenty of record-breaking pieces that we have got so far, especially with La La Land, considering that it has got 14 nominations, which is the most that a movie has ever gotten, and now it's tied up with Titanic and All About Eve. But for this one in particular, for the Animation Podcast, we are only going to be looking at the ones in animation. And this is the first time in a while that now finally animation is being nominated more than just in Best Animated Feature or even in Best Animated Short. We are seeing some animated projects spread around here and there, thank freaking God. And so I'm going to be looking at each of those specifically, which ones that animation has touched upon, and I'll go and give out a bit of my analytical thoughts on what I could see from here. And so, without further ado, let us officially look into the nominees for Best Animated Feature are Kubo and the Two Strings, Moana, My Life as a Zucchini, The Red Turtle, and finally, Zootopia. Now, when I first saw this list, honestly, I was ecstatic. And if you guys remember, like, in one of the previous episodes of the Animation Podcast, where I actually talked about my predictions of what could be nominated for Best Animated Feature, like, I'm just really excited the fact that I almost got every single one of them right. I managed to get Kubo and the Two Strings correct, I got Zootopia correct, and I even got the independent films correctly. I guess The Red Turtle, I knew that was going to get a nomination, and also My Life as a Zucchini. However, the one thing that I did not get correct was that when I made my predictions, I mentioned that Finding Dory would actually get a nomination, but instead, what actually happened was Moana. But to be fair, in my defense, when I was making those predictions, Moana wasn't even out yet. It was just right around the corner. So I haven't had a chance to see that movie yet, so I didn't fully know if it would actually have a chance to actually be a competitor for the nominations here. But it looks like it could be the case. So I would almost consider this like a legitimate guessing every single one of them correctly. So, you know, that's honestly really excited. I feel proud of myself for doing so. And a lot of them are extremely well-deserved. And to be very honest, as I'm doing this episode of the Animation Podcast, the only one that I have not seen yet is My Life as a Zucchini. But so far, I'm pretty much good with the rest of them. Like, I've seen Kubo and the Two Strings. That movie is amazing. I've seen Moana. That movie is amazing. I've seen The Red Turtle. That movie is amazing. And I've seen Zootopia, and that movie is amazing. So hopefully My Life as a Zucchini would be amazing as well, to see like how that is actually nominated among all the others. So definitely a great list that we have here so far. And if I would have to make my guess regarding who would actually be the winner, well, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if it would be either Zootopia or maybe Moana. I mean, considering the reputation that the Academy voters have regarding animated films, like, they could easily pick Moana because it's the one that recently went out in theaters that's from Disney. So, like, that's just the one thing that's fresh out of their memory. They'll be like, oh, well, my kid saw Moana. She liked it. I guess I'll vote for that, too. But chances are, like, they could probably go with Zootopia. I mean, it definitely was the big winner. Like, it got $1 billion at the box office, massively praised, and probably one of the biggest surprises of the year of how it turned out. Like, even for me personally, I would definitely give my vote to Zootopia. Such a phenomenal film. But yeah, honestly, just a fantastic list. And by the way, the one thing that I do want to mention is that in terms of the movies that didn't get nominated, the one in which people are really shocked about that the Academy decided to ignore this year was actually Finding Dory, and that didn't get a nomination, and people are just freaking out over the fact that, holy crap, Pixar got ignored this year, they didn't get a nomination. Honestly, like, I don't really get it why people are really freaking out about it. I mean, it's not the first time that Pixar did not get a nomination at the Oscars for one of their films. I mean, yeah, sure, there are the Cars movies, but like a recent example that I can think of is Monsters University. That actually did not get a nomination next to films like Despicable Me 2 and Frozen. But then again, I guess people are more shocked because technically Finding Dory is actually one of those films that are highly praised, almost as much as many of the other Pixar films. Not necessarily as much as like either the original Finding Nemo or The Incredibles or WALL-E or Up or stuff like that, but still, honestly, it was a massive hit. Like, it was massively praised by critics and audiences. And again, it's another movie in which it got $1 billion at the box office, but honestly, I don't really see it that much of a big deal, the fact that it didn't get nominated. And, like, personally, I do agree that, like, Moana is definitely better and more worthy to have a nomination at the Oscars more so than Finding Dory. But then again, like, if you take away Moana, then it would, like, I can actually imagine that Finding Dory would actually be the movie in which, like, you take away one of the films that got nominated, and, like, Finding Dory would just immediately take its place. Like, it's like the definitive runner-up, from what I can imagine. So, yeah, that's basically the whole thing with Best Animated Feature. And now let's go and move on to Best Animated Short. Now, I know many of you might not know any of these animated shorts, but it's still worth mentioning to talk about these. Anyway, going back into this, the nominees for Best Animated Short include Blind Vaisha, Borrowed Time, Parasiter and Cigarettes, Pearl, and finally, Piper. Now, the thing is that I'm sure, like, for those of you who are listening, the only one that you might have seen from all this is Piper, considering that is the animated short before Finding Dory. And, you know, I'm honestly really happy that this movie actually got the nomination. Definitely worth it. Really cute film and extremely well animated. But one of them that I'm really excited and happy that it actually did get a nomination was Borrowed Time. That is an absolutely phenomenal short. And for those of you who don't know, Borrowed Time is technically an unofficial Pixar short, because even though it's not distributed by Disney and Pixar, it was actually made in-house at Pixar. Animators Andrew Coates and Lou Hamu Lihaj, I think that's how you say his name, they both actually worked in the grounds of Pixar to go and create this animated short. And the result that came out of it is just absolutely phenomenal. And honestly, after you're like, when you're done listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast, I highly, highly recommend you guys to go and check out Borrowed Time online. You can actually go onto Vimeo, and they actually have the entire animated short for free there. So if you want to do a little bit more research onto the movies that you want to see that are nominated at the Oscars, and even down to the point that you want to check out the shorts as well, this is just a little tip if you want to go and check for something like Borrowed Time. Just go onto Vimeo and like it'll be worth it. That, or maybe you can wait until iTunes or like wherever that you can find that there is this like little paying section that you pay like maybe $7 or $8, and you can go and check out like all the animated shorts at once. I know that iTunes does it every year just to see what these shorts are. So I'll be using that so that I can do my homework on who got nominated for like best animated shorts and like to watch all the things that the Oscars recognized in terms of animation. Now, like I said before, though, this is actually a year in which animation actually did get more recognition, more than just in animated features. And the first one that I will get into here is actually for Best Original Song. And the two movies that actually did get a nomination include Can't Stop the Feeling from Trolls and also How Far I'll Go from Moana. They are actually nominated right next to other songs like The Empty Chair from Jim, the James Foley story, and also City of Stars and Audition, The Fools Who Dream, both of which from La La Land. And if I can be very honest here, I'm a bit disappointed when I see this list. I mean, I'm honestly really happy, especially for Moana, the song How Far I'll Go would actually get a nomination. Such a fantastic song, such a phenomenal song. But knowing the Academy and the way that they nominated La La Land into almost everything that they could put in, I do have a feeling that I know for a fact that they would actually give it to most likely City of Stars, like what they did with the Golden Globes, or they would give it to Audition. Like, this is one category that I know for a fact that they're just going to give it to La La Land. It's just we don't know which one is going to be. And honestly, that one I feel a bit disappointed to. Because, like, let me just give you guys a little bit of my quick thoughts onto La La Land. I have seen the movie, and if I could be honest, I'm actually one of those people that believe that La La Land is good, but I don't see it as this amazing film that deserves all of these awards and all this massive recognition from the Golden Globes and the Oscars. Like, honestly, yes, it definitely deserves some nominations, and, like, it does deserve some wins, but it's, like, it doesn't deserve to break all these records to the point of making it ridiculous. Like, it doesn't deserve every single Grammy nomination, I'm sorry, like, it doesn't deserve all the Golden Globes to break the record for the most wins for, the most wins for a single movie, or like getting 14, like getting as much nominations, 14 of them, as much as freaking Titanic. That's honestly a bit excessive. And like, especially the songs that are nominated, like City of Stars and Audition, like honestly, those are like, they're not bad songs. Those are honestly the more dull songs. Like if they actually did nominate, either the one that's in the prologue, like where everybody is dancing around like a traffic, or the one where Emma Stone is in a party and like she's not really having a good time, but everyone else is. Okay, that I can understand. Those are some fun songs. But these ones, honestly, they're not that great. And honestly, they're just there because they're songs about Hollywood and they're about like, you know, living the dream to be in show business and stuff like that. And the fact that those ones could potentially get over How Far I'll Go, like, that's the part where it kind of upsets me. Like, honestly, I even pick Can't Stop the Feeling over these La La Land songs, to be honest. I mean, they're just not the greatest, but, like, what I want to see to win is How Far I'll Go from Moana, but I know what's actually going to win is going to be something from La La Land, honestly. Okay, so with that said, there is actually another one that did get a nomination, like another category in which got a piece of recognition from animation. And this is actually a little bit historical, to be very honest, because Kubo and the Two Strings actually grabbed itself two nominations, not just for Best Animated Feature, but also for Best Visual Effects, right next to movies such as Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, Deepwater Horizon, Doctor Strange, and The Jungle Book. Now, some of you might think that this is actually pretty historical because chances are you guys have never seen an animated feature actually get a nomination for something like Best Visual Effects. Well, I will admit, like, it is a very, very rare moment. It only happens once in a blue moon, but it's not, like, the only time ever. Allow me to give you guys a little bit of a history of the Oscars and animation's recognition on the Best Visual Effects category. Now, ever since the category was pretty much created, some of the movies that actually did win for Best Visual Effects, some of them actually are nominated. They actually blend hand-drawn animation with live action, and these movies actually do come from Disney. Like, some of the winners would include Mary Poppins, they include Bedknobs and Broomsticks, and they even include Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And even among the nominations, there was Return to Oz, considering that it does use Will Venton's claymation onto it, so that would technically count as well. It wasn't until, I believe, in 1993, when, for the first time, a fully animated feature was nominated for Best Visual Effects, which was The Nightmare Before Christmas. But ever since then, when CGI started coming into the scene and really revolutionized how movies are today, like, that pretty much changed everything. And for the most part, animation was completely ignored, and, like, visual effects just wants to focus on, like, what the computers are doing, and sometimes the practical effects as well. But things have changed now in 2017 that Kubo and the Two Strings received a nomination. But the question still remains at this point, does Kubo and the Two Strings have a chance to actually get a win? And honestly, it's going to be really, really tough. Because the way that I see it, Kubo's biggest competition at this point is going to be The Jungle Book. And believe me when I say it that, if you guys remember in 2016, one of the most praised movies just by the visuals alone is The Jungle Book. Considering that everything is realistically CGI and the only live action bit that you would get is Mowgli himself, I mean, it really did such phenomenal work. And I mean, sure, like, technically, there is a bit of competition with all the other nominations as well, but when you do think about it, it is extremely rare that the Oscars would actually give an award to superhero movies like Doctor Strange, or even to Star Wars movies like Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. And then you also have Deepwater Horizon, which honestly, I feel like it's one of those that's just given as an extra because it did some great water effects and stuff like that. But yeah, overall, I would love to see Kubo and the Two Strings get a win, but honestly, there is a very high chance that The Jungle Book would be a winner. And I'm not I wouldn't be upset about it in the same veins of how La La Land would actually win Best Original Song. Like, The Jungle Book absolutely would deserve to get that award, hands down. But honestly, like, I would be rooting for either Kubo and the Two Strings or The Jungle Book. But yeah, like, this is all to say that Kubo and the Two Strings' toughest competition at this point is going to be with The Jungle Book in the Best Visual Effects category. Now, there actually is one more category that I want to talk about here, something that I'm not necessarily a big expert onto. Like, I haven't seen any of the other movies that are in here, but I think it's definitely worth mentioning that in the Best Documentary Feature category, one of the movies that actually did get nominated is Life Animated by Roger Ross Williams and Julie Goldman. If you guys have not seen Life Animated, I mean, you guys are animation fans, so You got to do yourself a favor and just see that documentary. Oh my God, it is phenomenal. It's not necessarily about animation itself. It's more about the story of Owen Suskind, this young adult with autism who is pretty much going through life, and his biggest aid is actually Disney movies, in which he would continuously watch them on his VHS. And he has a few favorites, you know, like he loves Peter Pan, he loves Aladdin, he loves Dumbo, and all that kind of stuff. So it's just something that I highly recommend. You can go check it out. Honestly, I haven't seen any of the other documentaries. I've heard talks that maybe 13th by Ava DuVernay is going to get a very high chance to get the win. I have not seen Fire at Sea. I have not seen I Am Not Your Negro. And I haven't seen OJ Made in America. But personally, I'm going to be rooting for Life Animated. And just the fact that it actually did get a nomination is absolutely phenomenal. Like, I honestly congratulate Roger Wass-Williams and the entire Suskind family for this massive honor. But we'll have to wait and see with how that goes. But anyways, that's pretty much all the nominations that animation has touched upon. So I just want to give a massive congratulations to all the filmmakers who actually got this achievement, who is actually getting this amount of recognition and potentially actually get a chance to be rewarded for their amazing efforts for it. So, and specifically, I just want to give a big congratulations to the people working on Moana for actually getting two nominations, and the people on Kubo and the Two Strings. They got double nominations as well. Congratulations also to the ones who individually got it, to Trolls, to Zootopia, The Red Turtle, My Life as a Zucchini, and also, of course, like I said before, to the people who worked on Life Animated. Congratulations to Roger Wass-Williams and also the entire Suskind family. So, when is this gonna happen? Well, we'll have to wait until, I believe, February 26th. When the Oscars are officially going to be announced, and see who the big winner will be. Now, for our next story, we are going to be looking into an acclaimed director, in which we all know as Guillermo del Toro. And so far, with what Guillermo's been doing nowadays, he is still a recognizable director and is currently being praised for his works with the original animated series by DreamWorks Animation that you can find exclusively on Netflix, Trollhunter. But as we all know, like, if there is one flaw regarding Guillermo del Toro, is the fact that I believe Guillermo doesn't know that he is just one man. I mean, he has announced so many projects that a lot of people are really anticipating for, but he's only one person and can only work on one project at a time. I mean, like, I'm on IMDb right now and looking at the list of projects in development. There are so many of them that, like, he's either attached to or rumored attached to, or he promised before into making. Like, there's so many of them that, like, you can imagine there would be so many promise, especially from the guy who did the Hellboy movies and Pan's Labyrinth, but so far we don't see it coming. Like he promised At the Mountain of Madness, he promised Frankenstein, he promised Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, he promised Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, he promised The Incredible Hulk, he promised a reboot of The Haunted Mansion. He did all these promises, but we're not really seeing any traction going on. But there is one, however, that it seems like it could be going somewhere. There could be something happening with it. And I'm, of course, referring to one of his ideas that he wanted to do, which is Pinocchio. And this is not going to be a Disney live-action reboot. This is pretty much going to be his own adaptation of Pinocchio, which there's a very high chance is going to stick a lot more closer to the book. And the art style is going to be based on Grim Grizzly. And for those of you who don't know who Grim Grizzly is, This guy is a little bit like the spiritual successor of Tim Burton in terms of his art style, where it's pretty much you see this mixture of whimsy and the macabre. That's the best way to put it. It's very Burton-esque, to say the least. And another factor is that Grim Grizzly actually did make an illustrated book of Pinocchio, where he actually provided some of the art to tell the original story of Pinocchio by Carlo Collodi. And what happened afterwards was that Guillermo del Toro was actually very impressed with it, that he actually said that he wanted to make a stop-motion animated feature based on Grim Grizzly's art style, and on top of that, to make it stop motion. Now, there is one picture that's floating around where we see how it looks like, and it looks pretty awesome, but so far that's the only thing that we have heard. Until recently, where Guillermo del Toro actually did make an announcement regarding a little bit of traction of what's going to happen with this project. And let me just read here, coming from my source in Collider, it says, I am preparing my first stop-motion animated feature with Pinocchio, which I've been trying to get off the ground for a while, but I haven't been able yet. But the last news on Pinocchio, which was very, very useful for me, was that I was looking for a co-writer who could be a great partner for me on this. And I'm happy to say that Patrick McHale from Over the Garden Wall is going to co-write the new draft of the screenplay with me. Now, of course, some of you may know what Over the Garden Wall is. It was the miniseries that was released on Cartoon Network that received massive praise. And Patrick McHale himself is definitely no stranger in animation. In fact, he has actually worked on some of the most acclaimed animated series of this decade. He was a part of the writing staff in Adventure Time. And he was also the voice of Hector Gon in Gravity Falls. And honestly, when looking into this, where Guillermo del Toro decided to choose this guy to be a part of the writing staff in Pinocchio, honestly, it really does make sense. Like, if you have seen Over the Garden Wall, it really is a dark story, and it would fit perfectly to tell something like Pinocchio that's a little bit more with the original story by Carlo Collodi. Because the thing is, the original Pinocchio definitely is dark as well. Like, there are some legit consequences where Pinocchio acts a lot more like a jerk. And also with Jiminy Cricket, he's just a really minor character that Pinocchio just immediately kills off with a freaking hammer. And I swear to God, like, just the opening alone, like, I feel like you can perfectly adapt that into a Tex Avery cartoon. And even Geppetto himself is like a godforsaken dick. So yeah, it's the thing is that Pinocchio, the way that you think of it, like the Disney film, is far from how it is in the actual book, where everybody's pretty much a jerk and consequences are very dire in here. Yes, even more than in the Disney movie. And in a way, when you look at Over the Garden Wall, it's a little bit of the same thing. Like, it has a lot more of a dark nature, but, you know, it's not too scary for kids. Like, they can also check it out and enjoy it as much as adults could. So definitely, it's a fantastic choice that Guillermo del Toro has made. But there is also another interesting passage here from my source in Collider, where he actually did comment regarding what he wants to do with animation. And he actually says, here's what del Toro had to say about continuing his career and working in some more animation alongside his live action works. There are a lot of things that are still pre-collating, but as far as I'm concerned, I am still planning to do my first animated feature as a director. It's been an apprenticeship with DreamWorks the last 7 years with Jeffrey Katzenberg. I was close to him as I could, and I was on productions of Puss in Boots, Kung Fu Panda 3, and so forth, because I am preparing to more and more direct animation. The normal route is that animation directors want to go live action. I want to be able to transit both mediums, live action and animation. And you can tell that Guillermo del Toro has an absolute fascination and an absolute love for animation. I mean, not only was he an executive producer on many of DreamWorks films, such as Puss in Boots, some of the Kung Fu Panda films like Kung Fu Panda 2 and 3, and also an executive producer on Rise of the Guardians, he was also an executive producer on The Book of Life. And even when you look onto, if you actually do own Watership Down, if you own the Criterion collection of Watership Down, either on DVD and Blu-ray, you'll find that there actually is a bonus feature in which Guillermo del Toro himself actually discusses about the significance in Watership Down, on top of having a really good knowledge on animation. And even when you look at his... Like you look in his what was it? Like he actually has this this house filled with memorabilia, and a lot of it is actually it actually includes a lot of animation works. Like he actually has a lot of artwork from Ivan Earle, from Bill Tytla. Like he actually has a lot of fascinating stuff, and not to mention, of course, like just a lot of Disney memorabilia and even some Haunted Mansion stuff. Like this guy is a huge fan of the mansion, which is why he said that he wanted to make a reboot, which would include the Hatbox Ghost. But overall, like you could tell that Guillermo del Toro is really passionate about animation. And I think like he's definitely going into a great route to learn more and more to get involved with animation. Like he is definitely taking some great steps where he started off just being a producer and trying to help out to get more and more involved until eventually he would feel completely ready to go into animation to direct his own feature film. And why not? I mean, an animated feature directed by the same man who did the Hellboy movies and Pan's Labyrinth, I'd be totally down for it. I would consider myself a Guillermo del Toro fan. I love the Hellboy movies. I love Pan's Labyrinth. And Pacific Rim is awesome. So definitely, I would love to see the day where Guillermo del Toro would actually work on something just work on an animated feature, and Pinocchio could be a good step for it. And also, I am currently planning to go and check out Trollhunters because I've heard nothing but massive praise, and it's even down to the point that some of my closest friends and families are pretty much telling me to go watch it, so I guess I have no choice at this point. But honestly, I am definitely excited. But if there is one thing that I would recommend Guillermo del Toro to do, like, if he really wants to go and do this stop-motion Pinocchio movie, like, I would love to see Guillermo del Toro at least get more involved with stop-motion films. I mean, he has done a lot of computer-animated projects like the DreamWorks films and also Book of Life. But honestly, like, if you want to do a stop-motion film, then try to get more knowledge onto that, you know? Like, be associated with Laika. Help Laika out with their movies. That would be a fantastic idea, you know? Like... You've seen what they have done with Kubo and the Two Strings and Coraline. In fact, like, their style can technically be right up Guillermo del Toro's alley. So, like, maybe, like, he could go and help out with them so that he can have a little bit more knowledge to go and work on his Pinocchio movie. Or even better yet, just have Laika animate it. Like, bring Guillermo del Toro into Laika and make that Pinocchio movie. That would be awesome! That would be a fantastic idea! Oh my god, honestly, I just made myself pretty excited for this Pinocchio project, but honestly, we'll just have to wait and see. But so far, Guillermo del Toro is definitely taking the right steps by bringing in Patrick McHale, so let's see how this goes. Or let's see if this will eventually happen, or just a part of his projects that he says he will make, and, well, it's just on the sidelines, who knows. Okay, so for our next story, we are going into Illumination Entertainment. And as you guys know, Illumination Entertainment is quickly becoming one of the strongest powerhouses in animation that can legitimately compete with both Disney and Pixar. And in 2016, they have definitely proven that, considering that they have made movies such as The Secret Life of Pets, which turned out to be a massive success, almost making $900 million at the box office. And then there was also Sing, which, as I previously mentioned in one of the earlier episodes of the Animation Podcast, I mentioned, or like, just a few weeks ago even, I talked about how Sing actually did break the record for the highest grossing wide release feature film to never make it at number one at the domestic box office because it was always competing against Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. But still, Sing is actually doing extremely well for itself. However, both Universal and Illumination Entertainment have actually announced that they are going to be making more sequels to these films. In fact, they have actually planned out their schedule for both 2019 and 2020. So let me just start things off with the previously announced Secret Life of Pets 2. Originally, it was scheduled for July 3rd, 2018. And yeah, like, it is true when you think about it that a movie, like a sequel to a movie that's going to be released 2 years after the first one, yeah, that's a little bit much and probably too much to ask for even. So what they decided to do is that they're going to be pushing that into an entire year so that The Secret Life of Pets 2 is going to be released on July 3rd, 2019. However, in 2020, you'll actually be getting two sequels from Illumination. First of which is going to be Minions 2, which that one is going to be coming out in July 2020. And then there's going to be Sing 2, which that one is coming out on Christmas Day 2020. Now, with all that said, like, that's pretty much the short bit of news that using my source and Variety is just telling me. That's pretty much it. And then also, like, just summarizing the successes of some of the movies, like how Sing is making a good chunk of money. It got nominated twice at the Golden Globes, and Minions made a crap ton of money. And also, The Secret Life of Pets was successful as well. But the thing is that when I look at this and hearing these announcements about, you know, there's going to be more sequels coming up, like not just The Secret Life of Pets 2, but also Minions 2, and then also Sing 2. Honestly, it did, I'm a little bit worried on this one, because as movies themselves, when thinking about stuff like Minions and Sing, like, I don't really see the point on having a sequel for those films. I mean, sure, like, with Secret Life of Pets, it's not the best movie of 2016, but it definitely does have potential to become a franchise, because the best aspect of that movie is the characters, hands down. And that's why it gives it a lot more chance to go and create more sequels out of it, because the weakest aspect of the movie was just the story. So if you can develop a better story with it, with characters that are already fantastic, then you got a massive hit that's going to be fantastic right there. But then when you look at something like The Minions and Sing, those are movies that work well on their own. Like, I don't see them really having franchise material. They kind of just work as their own movie. Like with Minions, for example, the whole purpose of it is to be this entire prequel to Despicable Me, but in the point of view of the Minions. So we learn about where do they come from, what is their purpose, what have they done throughout history, and where do they get their their gene overalls, like a bit of their mannerisms, and how it ultimately they would go meet up with Gru and be pretty much minions to Gru, essentially. So that's pretty much the whole point of Minions. I mean, it wraps itself up very well, and it succeeds what its intentions are, is to be a prequel to Despicable Me. And as for Sing, I mean, the story that is crafted, I don't really see it open up to more potential with what they can do with the whole concept of it. I mean, like, the whole point of Sing is a little bit like this jukebox musical where they would have a giant list of songs that they would go through one by one, and the whole point is to go and save Buster Moon's theater to create this spectacular show. Like, it started out as, like, this American Idol-style contest, but then it just became this theater project meant to entertain some people. That's pretty much it. I don't see how you can grow from there. Like, what else can you do with it? Is Buster Moon's theater going to be in trouble again? And what about the characters as well? Are we going to be adding in some new ones as well to what's already a giant list to the main characters? Honestly, it kind of escapes me. I'm not saying Sing is a bad film, but I'm not saying that it's like one of the best movies of 2016, but it's just like it works well as its own film, and I don't really see the need to expand more on what it all already has, to be very honest. And the same thing with Minions. I mean, like I said, it served its purpose. What else, where can you go from there? Are we going to continue the prequel story to Despicable Me and see Gru's relationship with the Minions? And I mean, technically, you can argue they've already done that during the credits, but still, where else can you go with it? And probably the biggest thing that I am actually concerned about is that Illumination is starting to just release sequel after sequel after sequel after sequel, that they're making less original films and they're starting to just create sequels, that's it. And what I'm worried about the most is if Illumination is going down the same path as Sony Pictures Animation, where they're just going to continuously be making sequels and try to develop franchises to the point that they would end up clogging themselves and just reach a dead end where their reputation is just creating nothing but like small franchise. They only have like a very few handful of franchises in their hands, and they have barely created anything original. Like, even to this day, Sony, like the last movie that Sony Animation has developed that was an original movie was Hotel Transylvania back in 2012. And that's a serious problem if you haven't made an original film since frickin' in 5 years, you know? And that's the one thing that I am worried about. But technically, there are a few things that are reassuring that technically, maybe Illumination is not going down the same path as Sony, because one, like, in between all this, like, this year we are getting Despicable Me 3, but in 2018, so far, the one thing that is confirmed to be released is going to be How the Grinch Stole Christmas. But even at that, some can argue that it's still considered a franchise movie, considering last time, They have already done The Lorax, so this could just be a part of Illumination's franchise of Dr. Seuss movies. But also, a second thing that reassures me that Illumination won't be like Sony is that Illumination is making a freaking crap ton of money. Just one of their movies alone is more successful than any of the franchises combined that they have done. Like, The Secret Life of Pets has actually made, like, The Secret Life of Pets alone has made more money than what both Hotel Transylvania films did combined, or even Minions, or just, like, Minions, or Despicable Me 2 alone, they have actually made more money than both Smurfs movies have made combined. It's honestly really crazy the amount of success that Illumination has been getting, so chances are they're not going to be going downhill. And that's like also Sony's biggest problem as well, is that they're only making short-term profit that like really isn't expanding in the long run. And that's pretty much the chance why we are seeing that the strong possibility that Sony Animation is just going to shut down eventually. Like, they're not going to see the light of day in 2020. So, yeah, that is the one thing that I am a little bit concerned about. Like, if they can release maybe just one more original animated feature between either in 2018 or in 2019, then that's going to give me some reassurance that they're going to be okay. Like, they're going to be okay creatively, and they're not just going to clog themselves with nothing but franchises. But anyways, if you guys are actually excited for the sequels that Illumination has brought up, then Secret Life of Pets 2 is going to be coming out on July 3rd, 2019. Minions 2 is going to be released on July 3rd again, but in 2020. And Sing 2 will be released on Christmas 2020. And my God, Christmas 2020, may I just say, man, that sounds like a dream time, honestly. Like, just imagine, guys, where there's a very high chance that things are going to be a lot more different. You know, just a time when things can be back to normal again. Just imagine. Oh, my God. I'm excited for Sing 2 now, just to be released, just so we could be on that day. So for our next story, we got for you guys Samurai Jack. And if you guys remember, a couple of weeks ago, I actually did talk about how Adult Swim is planning to re-air every episode of Samurai Jack during Saturday nights. And this had me a little bit concerned because they have yet to announce when the release date of the long-anticipated new season and grand finale of Samurai Jack would be coming in. We don't know when that's going to be coming until recently. Finally, Adult Swim decided they cannot take it any longer, and they decided to let the cat out of the bag, and the new season of Samurai Jack is actually going to be coming a lot sooner than you think, where they have officially announced that on March 11th at 11:30 p.m., Samurai Jack is going to be making its comeback. And the one additional thing that I just want to say, however, is that it's going to be actually pretty short. Apparently, they say that it's going to be just 10 episodes for the grand finale of Samurai Jack. So how they're going to release it one after another, if it's going to be just a weekly thing, just 10 weeks, and then boom, it's done, that I don't know, but we'll just have to wait and see with how they're going to do it. Either if it's going to be a weekly thing or just a monthly thing, who knows? But going back onto Samurai Jack, final freaking Lee, the time has come. We are going to see the great comeback of Genndy Tartakovsky in his original domain. Now, I will openly confess that, yes, I have been pretty tough on Genndy Tartakovsky, especially with all the things that he has been doing, just like deliberately decided to be completely ball and chain to Sony Pictures Animation, doing absolutely nothing but Hotel Transylvania thing. Like, just the Hotel Transylvania films. Like, he wanted to do some other stuff like Popeye and an original movie called Can You Imagine, but Sony immediately said no, and knowing their stupid selves, they just want him to do nothing but Hotel Transylvania. That's their only use for Genndy. But now, this is the Genndy Tartakovsky that I loved throughout the years. This is the Genndy Tartakovsky that I'm a huge fan of, considering I grew up with Dexter's Lab. The Samurai Jack series is completely awesome. It was fantastic. And I really loved the 2D Star Wars Clone Wars series that he developed. That was really great. And honestly, the most underrated thing that the most underrated thing that is in the Star Wars universe, to be very honest. Just absolutely fantastic. I have yet to see Symbionic Titan, though, but still, I love Genndy Tartakovsky's TV works, and this is the one that I have been waiting for, to be very honest. Like, and this is also one of the reasons why I'm excited for Sony Animation to just frickin' shut down once and for all, so that Genndy Tartakovsky can be free, so that he can work on brand new TV projects. And, like, considering we're seeing him at the Master, seeing him on his, like, great domain, this is going to be exciting to see what, how it's going to come out, especially that we're talking about the grand finale of Samurai Jack. This is going to be awesome. Like, finally, he's going to be face-to-face, like, the final confrontation between Jack and Aku. Definitely awesome. I'm truly excited for it. And, I mean, I don't think there's really much else to say. So, if you guys are excited to see the great comeback of Samurai Jack, then all you have to do is just wait until March 11th at 11:30 p.m. on Adult Swim to see Jack. And so, finally, we now have Matt's Pick of the Week. And this week, we actually have a little bit of an older article. This is actually coming from Slate, from Vadim Rizov. But this was actually something that I found this week that a friend of mine actually did pick up. And, you know, honestly, I looked through it and it really is fascinating. And it is something that I want to share with you guys. And if you can, after the animation podcast, you can go read it yourself at again, at Slate and just go and find the article by Vadim Rizov. And this article I am referring to is called Trolls Gets Everything Wrong About Sadness That Inside Out Got Right. So the big picture of this article is basically a comparison piece of how Inside Out is far superior than DreamWorks Trolls in terms of discussing about sadness and how to cooperate with it. Now, the big picture is that, like, there's a 99% chance that if you go and ask someone which movie is far superior, Inside Out or Trolls, then the answer would pretty much be Inside Out, hands down. It's such a phenomenal movie. Inside Out is easily one of the best animated features of the decade. So what is actually very interesting here is that it was pretty much mentioning how with Trolls, what you pretty much get is that this is a movie where its big message is to tell people how to be happy. You gotta be, like, you pretty much have to be happy and lift your spirits up. Like, it's always happy, 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 happy. That's why a lot of people are making strong comparisons with a troll in Central Park. It's, like, stupidly happy in a way. Whereas Inside Out, for example, like, it does mention that it is good to be happy, but you cannot avoid sadness. And that's the big thing that separates Inside Out with Trolls. With Trolls, it always mentions you gotta be happy all the time. You always have to be happy. If you're sad or if you're not happy, you have a problem. But with Inside Out, on the other hand, the big message that it wants to say is that sadness is something that everybody wants to avoid. That is true. But sadness is an emotion that we need. If there's something that we feel like is wrong, if we feel like something is hurting us, then it's best to express ourselves through sadness, to help, like, to speak out with someone. And that is, like, one of the best ways to be ultimately happy. And especially, like, one of the most, like, tear-jerking scenes is at the end when you see, like, sadness just fully takes control when Riley finally came back home after almost running away. And, like, sadness just immediately went on. She took control, and Riley just fully expresses herself about how she doesn't like her new home in California, that she misses her friends and all that stuff. And then ultimately, you got that orb, which is a mixture of happy and sadness. Like, oh my God, like, I'm almost tearing up just thinking about it. It's such a powerful, extremely powerful scene. It's just so good. But yeah, if I may take an excerpt here, going back into the point of the article, what they're, like, kind of the big point that that Vadim is pretty much saying in here, trolls may seem basically harmless, and true, it's hard to imagine how much damage a movie with characters who farts glitter could really do. But there's something insidious about trolls' insistence that any emotion outside of the manic upbeat spectrum is emotionally unhealthy. Branch isn't just sad. He's actively antisocial and an isolationist, fearing the return of the violent troll-hunting Bergens. He holds himself off in a forfeited bunker with supplies for 10 years. Sadness, then, isn't just a feeling. Whether a response to complex events or a manifestation of clinical depression, but an indicator of greater emotional trouble tied with paranoia and violence. And that's ridiculous. But this movie isn't going to make the lives of kids with clinical depression any better. The message is fundamentally anti-empathy. If you're not happy with us, Troll declares, you're against us. Troll's manic insistence of avoiding sadness at all costs is pathologizing a normal, healthy emotion is a reminder of how little kids' movies prepare their target audience for the difficult world they're going into. And it's definitely true. When you think about Trolls, the whole movie, Like, it definitely is an anti-sadness movie, because the big message there is to, you gotta be happy. And you, like, it's just find ways to be happy, avoid sadness at all costs, and just be happy all the time. And it's not just with Branch, where you see, like, he's the grumpy man that's not happy all the time and is always worried about the comeback of the Bergens, and that's why he's not joining in and everybody's dancing celebrations and hourly hugs and stuff like that. What pretty much happens, but there's also the factors like with the Bergens themselves. Like, those are known to be like very miserable creatures, and what usually happens is that they would go and just live their lives just being angry, just being miserable. And by their logic, the only way that you could be happy is by eating a troll so that you can digest their happiness, thus making you happy. You know, that's pretty much the only message that they have, is that, like, they show sadness as this really negative thing. Like, you're like legitimately saying that you are a terrible person if you're not happy. And even at the end, even though like the big message is pretty much saying like, oh, you don't have to be a troll to be happy, you can, like, being happy is on the inside and everybody's pretty much happy, where like all you have to do is just sing and dance and that's how you solve your problems. And even like at the point when like everything is pretty much sad, when all the trolls are all gray and just filled with depression knowing that they're gonna die, like, all Branch did was just sing and then everybody just suddenly became happy. Like, he just sang True Colors and everybody became happy again. And even at the end, when the trolls are singing Can't Stop the Feeling, like, that somehow just made all the Bergens happy. And that's pretty much it. Like, that's all there is to it. That's how you end up just being happy. Just avoid sadness and just be happy. But like I said before, with Inside Out, it doesn't isolate being sad. You know, it is like, it pretty much reflects upon how people are treating sadness, where you see joy all the time. Like, in the same veins of trolls, they're trying to isolate the sadness. Like joy would always put sadness in the corner, you know, in order to go and always have fun. Even, like, during the darker times, like, when she was faced with a lot of danger, like, a lot of obstacles that's, like, hindering her happiness, like, with, entering in a new home, being far away from her friends and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's pretty crazy. But, when you do think about, like, with sadness, is that at the end, or like throughout the whole movie, Joy has to learn to work with sadness in order to go back and ultimately save Riley from like living the rest of her life with depression. And I think that's kind of the big thing why, like, if I would meet someone with depression, I would highly recommend them a lot more Inside Out than it is with trolls. Because when you do think about it, someone with depression, like, this is like something like trolls is something that they have to live with every day and they absolutely hate it, where everybody around them is basically telling them, ah, come on, man, hey, cheer up, you gotta be happy, just you know, get away from the sadness and all that kind of stuff. They have to live, you know, they have to live that on a regular basis, and, you know, it's driving them nuts, because like the depression, like the disease that they have, is kind of hindering them from being happy. But with Inside Out, on the other hand, like, it's pretty much telling them that the sadness that they have is okay to have, you know, where, like, it's saying that not only is it is okay, but use it to your advantage to pretty much express yourself, to express how you feel in order to ultimately feel better in the long run. And I mean, this week, I've actually learned that personally, where, like, you know, like, you have to embrace the sadness and really speak out about it in order to ultimately be happy. Like, honestly, with the recent news that's been going on with Trump being an absolute tyrant and an idiot, like already on his first week ruining the United States of America. Like, honestly, it ultimately got me down, especially when you go onto social media, where it's just becoming more of a toxic environment where everybody is pretty much pissed off. And you see everybody is blaming, everybody is trying to find a place on who to blame for, or like who to blame for having Donald Trump as president. You know, like, I've seen people trying to blame the Republicans. Everybody is trying to blame the liberals and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's just becoming more and more of a toxic environment that it just feels like we're starting to live in a freaking dystopia. And I just feel sad upon it, you know? It really got me down. It wasn't until I talked to a good friend of mine that, you know, like, I expressed honestly how I felt. I might as well just say how I honestly feel to a friend of mine. And, you know, she helped me out throughout the whole thing. And, like, she recommended me some things about, like, how to be better a little bit. And, and trust me, like, I've done a lot of stuff beforehand where, like, I wanted to try to make myself feel better, whether it be distracting myself with working on videos or even just watching a few videos, but they don't work as well. And trust me, expressing, like, when you do feel sad, when you do feel depressed, it is a lot better that you express yourself to someone how you feel about it, to basically embrace the sadness that you have within, like, pretty much speak out about it, and trust me, the person you talk to, they'll try to help you with it, or, like, there's a very high chance that they'll help you with it, you know, someone that you can truly trust to, you know, help you bring back your smile. And that's exactly what she did. So that's basically the whole thing with the whole comparison with Trolls versus Inside Out, is that it's basically, like, if you want to know about how to, if you want to look for a movie on how to cooperate with sadness, then Inside Out is definitely it. Don't watch Trolls at all. Besides, like, the whole thing with Trolls in general is that it's honestly a soulless movie, to be very honest. Like, it has great animations. The animation is fantastic. The animators at DreamWorks did a phenomenal job with it. But the thing is that you could tell it's such a soulless movie because there was no care put onto the writing whatsoever. You could tell that DreamWorks made Trolls in the same veins on why Disney made Planes. It's not because they want to legitimately make a movie. It's because of the merchandising. Like, I can guarantee you that there are more toys of Trolls that are sold than, like, ticket sales. You know what I mean? So it's basically a soulless movie that you can't really trust on trying to find a message on finding true happiness and how to express yourself and cooperating with sadness in a way. That's pretty much why. But anyways, that is pretty much going to be it for this week. So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can also find more of my work onto Filmbook. All you have to do is search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505. If you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little favor? Just go and read and review this episode. That would just be wonderful. You would be a great person if you do so. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that little like button on our video and leave us a comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening. And until next week, see you later, dudes!